My wife Dottie and I had well laid plans to fly to Maine for vacation, but it became increasingly clear as our departure date approached that the travel restrictions there would make for a terrible vacation. So we got in the car and drove north. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, and you're listening to the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College. Our vacation trip of about 1,675 miles took us northwest from Lander to Cody, Wyoming, Yellowstone National Park, Three Rivers, Montana, Whitefish Lake, Montana, Glacier National Park, and back home via Butte, Montana, Yellowstone, and the Tetons. If you're thinking to yourself, that must have been beautiful, you're on track with the topic of this week's podcast. Beauty just may be the way to save our troubled world. In Cody, we visited the Whitney Western Art Museum at the Buffalo Bill Center of the West and viewed paintings of the lower falls of the Yellowstone River as it descends into Yellowstone Canyon, known as the Grand Canyon of Yellowstone. One oil in particular caught our attention, an 1881 painting of the falls by Albert Bierstadt. The next day we drove to Yellowstone National Park and found our way to Yellowstone Falls. Despite restrictions, closures, and no place to fill a water bottle with potable water, there was a good crowd of tourists, cameras or cell phones in hand, ooing and eyeing over the river as it cascaded over the upper and then the lower falls. Our oohs and ahs were among them. Bierstadt captured the image so well, and more than any natural scene I've ever observed, the actual falls resembled the painting. That is, it didn't look quite real, especially since the surrounding rock of the canyon wall appeared to have been painted in oil with a broad brush. Dusty yellows, muted reds, white-striped mahoganies, deep blacks, light browns, pinks, and purples offset the deep green of fir trees and the early green of aspen and the rush of white water over the cliff. As we hiked further downstream along the rim of the canyon, the almost impressionistic look of the walls became even more striking. I took photos, but they don't even begin to do the scene justice. Our trail turned away from the canyon and into a dense fir forest until we came to Lily Pond, where I hoped that we'd see moose. Instead, we saw bubbles rising to the surface in places where bubbles don't typically rise to the surface of ponds, a harbinger of what lay a few hundred yards ahead. There the trees thinned out and then disappeared altogether. We seemed to have stepped onto the surface of another planet, another rather inhospitable planet. The air by then had notes of sulfur. Nothing grows in the gritty white sand floor that was actually warm to the touch. Steam escaped from various fissures and small geysers. Water boiled as it entered pools along the trail, smelling of brimstone. Mud pots groaned and sent steaming mud into the air. We were well inside the caldera of Yellowstone, walking on the surface of what is the largest active volcano in the world. I find geothermal areas alien and creepy, and at the same time weirdly beautiful. Part of me thinks that springs emerging from the earth should be cold and clear, not boiling and sulfurous. That part also knows that if Yellowstone erupts, COVID-19 will be the least of our problems. And at the same time, part of me stares in wonder at all that smoking and bubbling and spurting. And I say, along with Psalm 104, "How many are your works, Lord? In wisdom you have made them all." And out came the camera to capture the beauty, and once again, I captured it inadequately. After passing the last and largest boiling mud pit, the trail turned, took us over a rise, and into an extraordinarily lush green alpine meadow, complete with buffalo lolling around in the grass. When David in Psalm 23 wrote about how God makes me lie down in verdant pastures, this was surely what he had in mind. And of course, it was not only the lush grass that struck us, but the contrast between the meadow and the barren geothermal field we had just passed. Remarkable. Later in the trip, up north, we hiked to Avalanche Lake in Glacier National Park. The day was overcast and a bit drippy. But that didn't matter. We barely found a parking space, and the trail was mobbed. Avalanche Lake is in a glacial cirque. That is, a glacier carved the valley out of the mountains and then stopped and melted, forming an oblong lake surrounded on three sides by high, steep mountains. The official literature says there are 7 waterfalls cascading from those mountains into the lake, but this still being early in the snowmelt season in northern Montana, I counted at least 10. Even though the weather threatened rain, and in fact it poured on us when we got back to the parking lot, we stood on the lake shore along with many, many hikers, all of us staring in awe, then snapping one photo after another, then standing in awe again. The photos, needless to say, were thoroughly inadequate, particularly in capturing the colors. Spring green, dark rocks, gray clouds with occasional breaks in the sky, deep green fir trees, and the peculiar aqua color of the lake. I asked a ranger about that. Glaciers, he said, pulverize rocks into what is known as glacial flour, F-L-O-U-R. That is, glaciers grind rocks into superfine dust, and that dust gets suspended in the water, giving it its otherworldly color in the lake and in the rapids of Avalanche Creek, the stream that the trail follows. Both at Yellowstone and at Glacier, in spite of restrictions, closures, warnings, and the lack of drinking water, people arrived from across the country to marvel at the natural beauty. In fact, we drove home through Yellowstone and noticed a significant increase in traffic through the park from 10 days earlier. It's as though we have a natural craving for beauty. C.S. Lewis, in his book The Abolition of Man, begins by describing a textbook for high school students he received. He gives the book and its authors pseudonyms. It's the Green Book, authored by Gaius and Titius. Lewis quotes the Green Book as it talks about waterfalls. When the man said, "This is sublime," he appeared to be making a remark about the waterfall. Actually, he was not making a remark about the waterfall, but a remark about his own feelings. What he was saying was really, "I have feelings associated in my mind with the word sublime," or shortly, "I have sublime feelings." Then Gaius and Titius add, "This confusion is continually present in language as we use it. We appear to be saying something very important about something, and actually, we are only saying something about our feelings." Close quote. Gaius and Titius asserted that there is no beauty in waterfalls, rivers, lakes, mountains, paintings, people, or anything else, just as truth and goodness are merely subjective feelings with no underlying objective reality, so is beauty. Nothing of the true, the good, or the beautiful is out there. It's all in your head, unless, of course, it's not, and either way, it really doesn't matter. Lewis comments, quote, "Until quite modern times, all teachers and even all men believed the universe to be such that certain emotional reactions on our part could be either congruous or incongruous to it. Believed, in fact, that objects did not merely receive but could merit our approval or disapproval, our reverence or our contempt." Close quote. Regarding waterfalls, he wrote, "The man who called the cataract sublime was not intending simply to describe his own emotions about it. He was also claiming that the object was one which merited those emotions." Well, that brings me back to national park visitors who drive and drive and then hike to stand in awe of Yellowstone Falls, Old Faithful, Avalanche Lake. People who stop their cars suddenly, jump out, and risk their lives rushing across the road to photograph buffalo, elk, or the Teton Mountains swathed in cloud. I suspect, actually I'm convinced, that while they may by now have written off truth and goodness as subjective and ever-changing, they still believe in beauty. My evidence? They come rushing out to see it. They reach for their cameras in order to try to preserve it in their memories and with their smartphones to share it immediately with family and friends. Our neighbors still believe in beauty, real, objective beauty, that all can and that all should recognize. In his November 2009 meeting with artists, Pope Benedict XVI told them, quote, "Authentic beauty unlocks the yearning of the human heart, the profound desire to know, to love, to go toward the other, with a capital O, to reach for the beyond, with a capital B. If we acknowledge that beauty touches us intimately, that it wounds us, that it opens our eyes, then we rediscover the joy of seeing, of being able to grasp the profound meaning of our existence, the mystery of which we are a part. From this mystery, we can draw fullness, happiness, the passion to engage with it every day." Close quote. Pope Benedict argued that beauty is a direct path to the knowledge of God, and with the knowledge of God, to a knowledge of the true and the good. Later this summer at the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, August 9th to 14th, adult learners will be here in very beautiful Lander, Wyoming, considering, quote, "Beauty is Truth, Science, and the Catholic Imagination." We'd love to have you join us, and you can go to our website, wyomingcatholic.edu, for more information. But even if you can't make it to Lander, this summer, and throughout the year, really, drink in the beauty of the world God has given us, and invite others, unbelievers, skeptics, lapsed Catholics, to drink in the beauty with you. Wax poetic about it. Let your imaginations run. Ask questions. Listen to others. For as Psalm 19 begins, "The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard, yet their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world." Perhaps beauty can still save the world, beginning with our neighbors. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.